Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
There are people who grow up believing the world is exactly what it looks like. Solid, predictable, governed by rules that apply evenly to everyone. And then there are people who learn very early on that reality doesn't behave that way for them. That it bends, that it leaks, that it occasionally allows things through that don't belong but don't leave either. For her, that realization didn't come with drama or ceremony. It arrived quietly in childhood, the way most permanent truths do. She was 5 years old when she first understood that she was seeing and hearing things other people couldn't. Not imagining them, not pretending, not dreaming, seeing, hearing, registering. At the time, she didn't have language for it beyond the simple certainty that something was different about the way she experienced the world. One of the earliest moments she remembers happened in her family's living room. Everyone was there. Adults and children gathered around the television, half watching whatever was on, half talking over it the way families do. The room was familiar, well lit, ordinary. Nothing about the setting suggested anything unusual was about to happen. And yet there was a man standing there. He wasn't looming or threatening. He wasn't transparent in the dramatic way people describe ghosts. He simply stood in the room as if he belonged there, positioned between her and her uncle. She looked at him instinctively and greeted him, the way a child greets someone who seems to be part of the moment. Her uncle stood up immediately. He was only 18 at the time, young enough to be unsettled by things he didn't understand, old enough to be embarrassed by them. He asked her who she was talking to. She answered honestly, confused by the question. She told him she was greeting the man standing right there. When her uncle insisted there was no one there, she added a detail that still unsettles her years later. She explained, very matter-of-factly, that she could see right through him, that he was standing between her and her uncle, but he wasn't solid. The room went quiet. Her uncle accused her of making it up, of trying to draw attention to herself. His reaction wasn't cruel, but it was sharp enough to sting. The moment passed the way uncomfortable moments often do, quickly, without resolution, folded into the background of family memory as something better not revisited. But for her, it didn't pass. That man didn't disappear from her life just because no one else acknowledged him. He simply became something she learned not to talk about. Around the same time, something else entered their home. Her brother came back from the market streets of Durban with a wooden Zulu drum. It was handmade, heavy, and beautiful in a way that felt ancient rather than decorative. It wasn't a souvenir in the casual sense. It carried weight, presence, the kind of object you notice even when you're not looking directly at it. Not long after the drum arrived, the dreams began. At first, they were strange, but manageable, vivid, emotional, hard to shake after waking. Then they escalated, growing darker and more disturbing with each passing night. What made them harder to dismiss was that both she and her mother began having them at the same time. Different details, same underlying tone, the same sense of intrusion. She was only 6 years old, but she remembered the dreams clearly enough to describe them in detail the next morning. That alone alarmed her parents. Children forget dreams quickly. They blur, they fade. Hers didn't. They stayed sharp. One dream in particular never left her. In it, she wasn't fully awake or fully asleep. Something had taken hold of her, lifting her out of her body as if gravity no longer applied. She floated upward, pressed against the ceiling, suspended there while the rest of her family stood below, reaching for her, trying desperately to pull her back down. No matter how hard they tried, they couldn't touch her, couldn't grab her, couldn't stop whatever was happening. She described it calmly, without theatrical fear, as children often do when they don't yet know what something is supposed to mean. That calm terrified her parents more than screaming would have. Her mother was already struggling with her own dreams by then. When their housemaid, a Zulu woman, heard about the drum and the timing of the dreams, she didn't hesitate. She told her mother the drum had to be destroyed, not removed, not sold, not given away. Destroyed. There was a specific way it had to be done. The legs had to be broken first, then the drum itself had to be burned completely. No shortcuts, no half measures. They followed her instructions exactly. And the dream stopped. That alone should have been enough to leave a permanent impression, but at the time, it was treated as a solution rather than a mystery. The house returned to normal. Sleep became restful again. The incident was folded away as something strange but resolved. For her, though, it marked a turning point. She learned something important at 6 years old, that her experiences made people uncomfortable. The talking about what she saw and felt led to tension, fear, or dismissal. So she did what many sensitive children do. She went quiet. By the time she was 10, she had stopped sharing almost entirely. But silence didn't stop the man from returning. He appeared at night most often, standing in her room while she slept, not looming, not reaching, just watching. He would stay for weeks at a time, then vanish for months as if he'd never been there. He never spoke, never moved suddenly. He walked through her room with an unsettling calm. One detail stood out more than any other. He never walked down the hallway. She saw him approach it, stop at the entrance, and remain there as if blocked by something invisible. He would stand motionless, staring down the corridor, then eventually turn away. That hallway terrified her more than the man did. There was a painting hanging there, a portrait of a young woman whose eyes seemed to follow you no matter where you stood. She begged her grandmother to remove it, insisting she couldn't sleep while it was there. Only later did she learn the painter had deliberately created the illusion, a trick of perspective. At the time, it didn't matter. What mattered was that if the man wouldn't enter the hallway, then whatever was there felt far worse. Eventually, the man stopped appearing. Years passed. Childhood turned into adolescence. The strange experiences faded into the background, easily blamed on imagination, media, books, and a mind too active for its own good. She lost her belief in the paranormal almost completely, convincing herself that everything she'd experienced had been a product of stories and fear. Even during that denial, strange things still happened. She ignored them. It worked until it didn't. 3 years ago, the memories came back with a force she couldn't dismiss. By then, her life had changed in other ways. She had always been a Christian, but at 14, she had made a conscious decision to fully commit to her faith, not casually, deeply, intentionally. Not long after that, her uncle, the same one who had challenged her years earlier, died suddenly of a heart attack after years of heavy smoking and drinking. And that was when the man returned, not quietly, not patiently, but in a way that left no room for denial. His return didn't come with warning signs or gradual buildup. There were no familiar sensations easing her back into the idea that something had followed her from childhood. It arrived abruptly, violently enough that there was no room left for doubt or rationalization. It happened months after her uncle's death, during a night that began completely unremarkably. She went to bed as usual. The windows were closed. The bedroom door was shut. The closet doors were closed as well. Heavy sliding panels that never moved easily because the carpet beneath them caught at the bottom, acting like a permanent break. Opening them required effort. Closing them took intention. She fell asleep without thinking about the past or the things she had once convinced herself weren't real. The sound woke her first, a sudden explosive slam that reverberated through the room, followed by a rush of air so forceful it sent her curtains billowing outward as if a storm had been unleashed inside the house. She jolted upright, heart racing, disoriented by the violence of it. For a split second, her mind searched for an explanation. Wind, pressure, something mechanical. But that thought collapsed almost immediately. There was no wind outside. The windows were still closed. The door to her room stood exactly where she had left it. The closet doors, however, were slammed shut with enough force to make the room feel smaller, tighter, as if something had pushed outward and then sealed itself in. She got out of bed, shaken but determined to find an explanation. She checked the windows. Locked. She checked the door. Closed. She stood in the middle of the room, waiting for something else to happen, for the sound to repeat, for anything that might confirm or deny what she'd just experienced. Nothing did. Eventually, she went back to sleep, unsettled but exhausted, telling herself she would talk about it in the morning, that she would say it out loud finally instead of swallowing it the way she always had. When morning came, she told her mother what had happened. The words came out clumsily, rushed, as if saying them too carefully might make them sound unbelievable, even to herself. Her mother listened, nodded, and suggested it might have been a nightmare. Stress, an overactive imagination. The same explanations she had relied on years before. She went to school and forced herself to forget about it. That afternoon, when her mother picked her up, she immediately sensed something was wrong. Her mother was pale, quiet, distracted in a way that couldn't be explained away by a bad day. She didn't speak during the drive, not until they were back in the house, doors closed behind them, the familiar environment reestablished. And then her mother told her what had happened. While cleaning her room earlier that day, the exact same thing had occurred, the same violent slam, the same impossible rush of air, the same overwhelming sense that something had moved through the room with intention. From that moment on, there was no denying it. The man had returned, and they gave him a name. Fricky. It wasn't done ceremoniously or with reverence. It was almost casual, a way of acknowledging his presence without giving him more power than necessary. Naming him made him easier to talk about, easier to reference without fear creeping into every sentence. And Fricky didn't behave like the entities she'd grown up hearing about in movies or stories. He wasn't aggressive. He wasn't chaotic. He didn't seem interested in terrorizing them. Instead, he observed. He lingered. He interacted with the environment in ways that felt deliberate rather than random. Guests noticed him before he was ever mentioned, and people staying overnight would wake up unsettled, complaining that their blankets had been pulled away or that someone had sat on the edge of the bed while they slept. None of them ever saw him. They felt him instead, a weight shifting the mattress, a presence close enough to register without revealing itself. But he seemed particularly interested in newcomers, as if assessing them, learning them, confirming whether they belonged in the house. Once that assessment was complete, he would retreat, leaving behind nothing but discomfort and confusion. With her and her mother, his attention was different. He lingered more often, stayed closer, made his presence known in subtle, repetitive ways. He played with lights, flicking them on and off in their rooms, sometimes repeatedly, sometimes just once enough to be noticed. He disturbed wind chimes she kept near the window, setting them swaying when no breeze followed. Strangely, none of it felt threatening. Unsettling, yes. Intrusive, certainly. But not malicious. Over time, fear gave way to familiarity. Familiarity gave way to acceptance. They stopped reacting with panic, stopped trying to chase explanations that didn't fit. Fricky wasn't an everyday presence. Months could pass without a single incident. Then for a week, he would make himself known repeatedly, as if checking in. What disturbed them most wasn't what he did, but when he did it. Patterns emerged. Whenever something serious was about to happen, illness, conflict, loss, Fricky became active. Lights flickered more frequently, sounds increased, the air felt charged in ways she recognized immediately. It was as if he was announcing something rather than causing it. For 2 straight weeks, he was relentless. Lights switched on at night. The sense of being watched intensified. Both she and her mother reached a breaking point, shouting into empty rooms, demanding he stop. And then, just as abruptly as it began, it ended. The following Monday, she became severely ill. Scarlet fever. At 19, the diagnosis stunned her doctors. It was considered a childhood illness, rare at her age, and aggressive enough to require heavy antibiotics. The medication left her sleeping for hours at a time, drifting in and out of consciousness for nearly 2 weeks. During that time, her mother noticed something strange. Every night, without fail, the bedside lamps in her room were on, even after her mother turned them off. She would wake every 3 to 4 hours to find them glowing softly again, as if someone wanted the room lit while she slept. After that, the pattern became impossible to ignore. Before accidents, before arguments that fractured the family, before illnesses that disrupted their lives, Fricky appeared, played with lights, stirred the air, made himself known just enough to draw attention. They stopped seeing him as something to fear. They started seeing him as a warning. There were moments when they wondered if he was her uncle, the one who had challenged her as a child, the one whose death coincided with Fricky's return. The timing was too precise to dismiss entirely, but the memories from her childhood complicated that theory. The man she had seen as a child felt older, different, less familiar. Whatever Fricky was, his presence predated her uncle's death. That left questions without comfortable answers. She doesn't know if Fricky will stay forever. She doesn't know if one day he will disappear as quietly as he came. What she does know is that her life has been shaped by awareness, by the understanding that not everything announces itself clearly, and not everything that watches means harm. She has learned to listen without panicking, to observe without inviting, to live with something that exists on the edges of her understanding rather than demanding certainty. Some people live their entire lives believing they are alone unless proven otherwise. She learned at 5 years old that solitude is often an illusion, and once that lesson takes hold, it doesn't fade. By the time she reached her early 20s, she stopped trying to decide what Fricky was in any absolute sense. The question had circled her life for too long, landing nowhere solid, leaving her more unsettled each time she tried to force an answer. Ghost, spirit, guardian, echo, something else entirely. None of the labels ever fit cleanly, and she learned that insisting on one only made the rest of her life harder to live. What mattered more was how his presence shaped the rhythm of the house. There were long stretches where nothing happened at all. Weeks turned into months of quiet, ordinary days where lights stayed off, wind chimes stayed still, and the air felt neutral again. During those times, it was easy to believe that whatever had been there had finally moved on, that the chapter had closed without ceremony. She would almost relax into that belief, almost convince herself she had imagined the patterns, the timing, the connection between Fricky's appearances and the disruptions that followed, and then something would shift. It was never dramatic at first, a single light flicking on when no one was near the switch, a soft movement in the air that made her pause mid-step. The unmistakable feeling that the house was no longer empty in the way it had been the day before. Her mother would notice it too, sometimes without a word needing to be exchanged. They had learned to read each other's reactions, the small changes in posture or expression that signaled shared awareness. When Fricky was present, the house felt alert, not hostile, not oppressive, just awake. Over time, they stopped reacting with fear or anger. The night they screamed at him to stop during the weeks leading up to her illness became a turning point, not because it chased him away, but because it showed them how powerless panic was. Yelling hadn't protected them. Ignoring him hadn't worked either. What did work, strangely, was acknowledgement without invitation. They spoke about him calmly, casually, as if referring to an eccentric relative who visited unannounced. "Fricky's active again," her mother would say. switching off a light for the third time. Or something's coming. When the wind chimes stirred without reason, they didn't speculate aloud. They didn't ask questions they couldn't answer. They simply paid attention. The attention itself felt important. When Fricky became playful, as her mother described it, something always followed. A phone call that changed everything. A sudden illness. An accident narrowly avoided or not avoided at all. A family argument that erupted without warning and left damage behind. Looking back, she realized that the events themselves weren't unusual. Life is full of disruption. What unsettled her was the timing. The way Fricky seemed to announce the shift before it happened, like a pressure change before a storm. It made her wonder whether he was reacting to events that were already set in motion or warning them of something approaching. Whether he was a messenger or simply a byproduct of heightened emotion and stress, whether he was attached to the house, to the women in it, or to something much older and harder to define. The question of her uncle lingered. There were moments when the idea that Fricky might be him felt comforting. The thought that someone familiar, someone connected by blood and memory, might still be watching over them offered a kind of reassurance. But that theory always fell apart when she thought about the man she'd seen as a child. That presence had existed long before her uncle's death, long before adulthood, long before denial. If Fricky was her uncle, then he had been there waiting, silently, for years. And that possibility raised more questions than it answered. As she reflected on her childhood, the patterns became clearer. The man in the living room when she was five, the nights he stood watching her sleep, the way he refused to enter the hallway, as if something else claimed that space, the terror she had felt not of him, but of whatever kept him at bay. Even the Zulu drum and the dreams that followed took on new meaning. Objects, people, and places weren't isolated experiences. They were intersections. And she began to understand that her sensitivity wasn't something that had suddenly appeared or disappeared. It had simply gone underground during the years she refused to acknowledge it. Faith had played a role in that suppression. Her relationship with God gave her structure, certainty, a framework that made sense of a world that had once felt unstable. But faith, she realized, didn't erase experience. It coexisted with it. The hardest lesson was accepting that not everything needed to be fought or solved. Some things exist in the margins where explanation fails. Fricky lived there, not crossing lines, not demanding devotion, simply making himself known when the house or the people in it reached a breaking point. He didn't arrive to cause harm. He arrived when harm was already approaching. That realization shifted how she saw her own life. She stopped wondering whether this would be a lifelong situation and started asking whether it mattered. If Fricky stayed, she would adapt. If he left, she would notice. Either way, she was no longer afraid of him. Fear had been replaced by something quieter and more complicated. Awareness, responsibility, acceptance. She doesn't invite him. She doesn't speak to him directly. She doesn't try to communicate or ask for signs. She knows better than to open doors she might not be able to close, but she also doesn't deny him. When lights flicker, she acknowledges it. When the air feels different, she pays attention. When patterns emerge, she prepares herself emotionally for what might follow. The house feels less lonely with him there. That's a strange thing to admit, but it's true. His presence doesn't bring comfort exactly, but it brings confirmation. Reminder that intuition matters. That not everything meaningful announces itself loudly. That some warnings come quietly, dressed as nuisances or coincidences. Easy to dismiss if you're not listening. She is 20 years old now, old enough to know that life rarely offers clean endings. Old enough to accept that some questions don't have answers meant for human certainty. Whether Fricky will disappear one day or remain a constant is something she no longer tries to predict. She has learned that the paranormal isn't always about fear or spectacle. Sometimes it's about patterns, about attention, about understanding that the world is layered and some people are simply more aware of those layers than others. Her life hasn't been ruined by that awareness. It has been shaped by it. And if Ricky does leave someday, she suspects it won't be because she chased him away or finally figured him out. It will be because whatever purpose he serves, warning, watching, marking moments, has finally run its course. Until then, when the lights flicker and the air shifts, she listens. Not because she's afraid, but because she's learned that ignoring the quiet signs has never worked. And because some presences, once acknowledged, don't need to be explained to be understood.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Plus, terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.